The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, thank you for being with me today on Afternoons with Mike. I am in the studio with Darren Slack. Darren is an old friend of mine, and we go way back to the mid-80s when I lived in Orlando the first time. He was on my program. Darren, you were here in fact, in this very building before our main studios got all built out. And yeah, we were sitting in a small office that we were using temporarily. And you were actually, it was a small conference room now that I remember. You were there. Oh my goodness. That seems like a couple of years ago. COVID has made everything seem like a couple of years ago, but it was only last August. So it's been over a year now. But so grateful you're here, and I'd like to say welcome, man.
Oh, thank you for having me, and boy, I'm impressed by what God has put together for you here, and congratulations. This is an amazing setup, and it's going to bless a lot of people in the Lord.
Well, we're thankful for it. Our main studios are completed, and even later this week, all operations will migrate to this studio where we are right now. Operations meaning the actual transmission. It's kind of a convoluted, into the weeds of explaining exactly how we've had to do it before. But thank God for technology, and we'll be talking about technology this week. But this is a really, really big week for The Shepherd, and I'm grateful that you're here. Darren, in addition to being a person that God has used in the whole quarterback scene, we'll talk about that first in a moment. But just to give a rough thumbnail sketch of this man, I first met him when he was a quarterback at UCF and literally got to meet him face-to-face and talk with him just hours after the big game. We'll talk about that in a moment. Where you ended up, I'm listening, I'm watching you, and then all of a sudden you're at my house. I mean, that's crazy. That's what was happening on that day. And you were there with a friend of mine, a friend of ours, by the name of Bob Gainey, as I remember. And Bob knew you, and you were hanging around, and just after that game was over, here we are, and that began a friendship. And that friendship has lasted all of these years. What year was that game?
1987. And I want to commend you for your memory, brother. That is amazing. I have zero recall of any of that.
Oh, my goodness.
Only that I was at the church right around the time, December 5th, 1987 was the game date.
Yeah, that's
it. So it would have been within weeks of that time that I came to Metro Life and met you as a pastor and got to know you. And God just called me home right there and just called that place home for me. And I've been there now almost 33 years.
And by that, you don't mean you died there.
No. I'm just saying I got to call that church home, and I've been there for almost awesome. 33 years now.
That's right. And it is
a great memory. Need to clarify that. Sorry.
Yeah, right. It is a great memory. That I have from that day. And I was so impressed with your skill, and you were, one of the times we would have been together, I don't know why I thought I could do this, but I was playing pitch and catch with you on a football, and you just made one of those quarterback throws to me that I thought, when I saw that football coming to me, I honestly thought it was the end of my life right here. It's been nice knowing you. What am I going to do? And you just about took me out on that one. So I learned that I'm never, ever going to do that again. Even to this day, I would never attempt that. But Darren, in addition to doing the football thing, you have done so many things that you did so well with training people up in the business. You were an AD at Masters Academy for a while, a football coach, but then you've taken that to another level with a quarterback academy that's been going on. How many years now?
We're in our 33rd year of quarterback training. When I finished, I had my first clients right after I got done playing in 87. And we did our first camp right about that time at UCF with 13 kids. Nobody got better, but I demonstrated well, like you said, I could throw it. But I had no idea what coaching was. I had no idea what it meant to coach. I only knew the idea of if I could help a few kids get better, maybe their coaches would be open to the gospel, because I was working with Fellowship of Christian Athletes at that time.
Yes, you were.
So I used that as a way to kind of say, well, if I feed them in their need, they might be open to what I have to share. And that was my motivation originally for getting involved with the quarterbacks. I never realized that that would become a life-defining and a life-altering environment for me to be in for the next 33 years.
Wow. Well, there's so many things about your experience that I've had to organize all this. So we're going to talk, first of all, about your quarterback abilities. But in, again, going back to that thumb scale, the sketch of your life, the thumbnail overlook, if let's call it that way, we break it down. It is more than just quarterback knowledge that God's given you. You have the ability, you're an amazingly, what I would consider to be a prophetic guy. You have always had that sense of being able to look at something and sense something that God would have to say. And it's a proven thing. It's a proven thing by pastors who, and you've actually written a book on it. And we're going to be talking about some of that as well. Darren, in addition to that, has traveled overseas in ministry with a group and recently added the ability to produce TV programs to your portfolio. My goodness, man.
This is a busy guy.
It's either a crazy guy or a busy guy. I'm not sure.
A little bit of both.
That's crazy. So this man is well-rounded in his experience. But let's go back to talk about quarterback for something. You've been doing this again for over 30 years. Here's my first question. When did you first realize that you could throw the football like a bullet? When did you first, what was the first thing?
When I was 10, 11, 12 years old, we used to go in the orange groves with our friends and we would have orange fights. And I was always the one that was picked to be on the team with the best athletes. It was the only time I ever got picked first in all of my growing up in the neighborhood, because I had the strongest arm in the neighborhood. I could hit kids. My ability to process in an orange grove, which is a grid, you know, the ability to lead a guy through three or four rows away, I was the only one that could hit anybody because I was accurate and I was strong, and that was my thing. And I was always the one they had to switch teams on because they had to change the rules because I would hit people, and it was just kind of a boy thing at the time, but I had this capacity to throw things. I could stand in the street during street football and throw it farther than everybody else, and this kind of became a way for me to distinguish myself. So when football started, you know, in the neighborhood when I was in sixth, seventh grade, we didn't have anything like they have today. It was no established programs. You know, when the flyer came out for the Seminole Youth Association of Football, I was kind of obligated to go try out. And of course, the coaches were amazed at my ability to throw the ball far. I think I threw it 55 yards in eighth grade, the youth ball. It was, you know, that's a big, long way for a young man. Problem was, is I didn't have the mental, emotional, or physical toughness for the game. And so there was this transition that I had to go through for a number of years that every quarterback has to go through. And I realized that I had some serious deficiencies in my understanding of masculinity, of understanding what it meant to handle myself in an environment like that, that ended up really informing a lot of what I would do later on as I taught young men how to overcome those challenges in their early years as players themselves. And so God used what was a weakness in me at the time, not just to put kids in tough situations and see them get tougher, like you create a drill and have two kids hit each other, but really just an emotional and mental understanding about what matters and who's more important. And those are things that I learned very early that it really became touch points for me as I became a coach and moved into that realm and really became game changers that really set me up to be a leader in the industry.
Why is it that so many players that are like you have the ability, what do you think this is? They have the ability to not only do it themselves, which you did, you overcame those deficiencies, obviously, you became the one of the most noted quarterbacks up until the time that you were there at UCF, and you held records for years there and probably still have some records.
I still have the interception record. I threw the ball to the other team more than anybody else in the history of quarterbacks at UCF. So the one I'm reminded that I still have. I set 28, and that was the one that I still have. Yeah. I think I still have a few others, but
I always have a good time. I don't know if this is true. I heard that Dante Culpepper was the one that broke a lot of your
records. Well, I tell people that I played at UCF BC or AD. It's before Culpepper or after Dante, however you want to say it. Kind of a messianic kind of reference there, because I think it's important to realize Dante really was the one that put UCF on the map. But I was there at a time when, you know, UCF was just a, you know, commuter school that charged a football fee that nobody understood.
But it was growing.
Right.
And
we
it
were
was a
the
very,
last
yeah.
the last season that I played in was the last year that we were small time.
Yes.
They went Division I after I left, and boy, they are just, they beat Georgia Tech the other day. I was so excited for them, and they're doing great. And we always knew that would happen. It was just a matter of time because of all the talent that's in the state of Florida. But for me, I'm more surprised than anybody I had the success that I did because of those deficiencies. And it was only the grace of God that delivered me from those things at a critical moment in my freshman year at UCF that allowed me to move to the level I was at. Because without that, I would not have been able to make it. I would have been moderately successful, but not to the level I was able to succeed. Everybody bumps into the highest level of their own incompetence. I think the Peter principle.
Mm-hmm.
I probably was the classic overachiever because of what God did in my life. And it's always been that way. His grace is always more than made up for where I lacked. And so I try to communicate that in my messaging with our football in a way that kids know where I stand. I can't preach, but biblical principles are, you know, threaded throughout everything I do to help kids understand that they can have a quality of life. And there's a common grace in what God has provided for young men to understand themselves and how to play this game. And what that, the real excuse here is leadership. I'm impacting the next leaders of our industry, the next leaders of our schools, the next leaders of our businesses and careers and families. And so my excuse to keep going was my ability to impact, you know, future leaders who have passion to be something more, which is a rare thing to find in young men today. When you look at a group of young men and say, how many of you want to be a one percenter? Meaning, what you want to do in playing college football puts you in the 1% of, and they all want to be that. And It's like the statistics don't bear it out. Only about 3 or 4 of them will actually succeed in that. But the desire opens a door for me to communicate from a messaging standpoint, something that I believe really honors God. And it's been a great opportunity to leave kids better than I found them. And maybe I wasn't always the one who knew everything about throwing mechanics, but really the permission it gave me to influence them as young men, as sons, as leaders, was wide open. And parents have been very grateful for that for many years. And it's really built a culture that many people have been very blessed by. And it's now led to the opportunity now to be acquired by a large organization. And we're about ready to make a transition ourselves.
Now, going back to this, where you were at that point in time, compared to where a lot of, you know, let's say the quarterbacks of today that are wanting to go to college, maybe they're playing high school football, but they're living in a different world with a lot of different distractions. We didn't even have cell phones back when you weren't there. That wasn't even thought of. It wasn't even a context that people would be walking around with a computer, functionally, a computer in their hand and texting people. What do you see today that kids today are having to deal with that you didn't have to deal with?
Well, the bullying has come front and center. The mental and emotional challenges that we faced physically, one to another, in the neighborhood when I would go out and play with my buddies, has now come full center on a screen. In other words, they're facing on a screen what I faced face-to-face in the neighborhood.
Mm.
So when I would go out to play and I was made fun of or ridiculed for something I couldn't do, they now see it in front of them on a screen. And kids today are faced with the very same challenges I had. The difference is the volume of it.
And the way it's transmitted.
Exactly, dramatically. Mm-hmm. And so the immaturity is the same. The abusiveness is the same. The jealousy and envy is the same. All those things are the same. It's just more private, anonymous, and more deadly. The spirits of abandonment, rejection, illegitimacy, all the things that the enemy's using to scheme young men today out of what out of what God's called them to by his grace is so prevalent. And it's not about just putting the phone down. That's not the objective. It's about helping them to understand how God sees them differently, how God has a plan for them in spite of that. See, God's not surprised by all this. You know, this is the prince of the power of the air doing what he does.
Mm-hmm.
He creates in technology an opportunity to do something evil, but God's going to use it for good. Mm. And technology is by itself like many other things, just an advancement. It's great. But used for the wrong purpose, it can be deadly. And that's where a lot of young men are today, is they're deeply influenced by this distraction, but also this constant wave of challenge to their opportunity and their desire to move forward.
You know, you bring up an interesting point that in some ways, with all of our technology and all the things that kids have today that are distractions, it really is only a different way for it to come to them.
Right.
Because you had none of those distractions in terms of technology, in terms of a phone, in terms of messaging or texting or, like you said, of the bullying through technology. But you still dealt with it and would have found yourself in that year, in that era, you're facing these, what you called inadequacies.
Yeah, the distractions we faced when we were younger were just as prevalent. They were just manifested in a different way.
Hmm.
So we were still desiring to be validated, still desiring approval, still desiring all those things. It's just that now it's just brought closer to these students who now in their own private suffering are encountering these challenges with often without a mentor, without input, without proper oversight and supervision. Back then, everybody's parents was everybody else's parents. So when you went down the street to play with your friends, their mom was your mom in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
They were expected to keep you out of jail, keep you out of trouble. And as long as you guys didn't go too crazy, you know, our distraction was making stuff up to hurt ourselves and hopefully not get killed, but have fun. You know, we make up games. We just, you know, we found ways to occupy ourselves. Kids do the same thing today. They just use apps and game controllers and they still gather together. They just do it on headsets and, you know, things like that. And so the environments are the same. The issue is that the scheme has not changed.
Mm-hmm.
The scheme of illegitimacy, the scheme of abandonment, rejection has not changed.
One quick question before we take a break, Darren. When you look back and you were there, obviously you transitioned from that young man that had all these problems, all the deficiencies that you mentioned, yet you made it all the way to play college football. And it was still a big screen, even though that you were there before they went, as you said, big time. It was still pretty big to play and to be at the level that you played. What made the difference? Was it a man in your life that was discipling you? What made the difference?
In my ability to get to the collegiate level?
Yes.
My ability at the time, my talent, did open the door for me. Like they say, a man's gift will make room for him. But what allowed me to succeed was the influence of a group of people who took me under their wing as a freshman and taught me the principles of Christ that allowed me to overcome the things that I was faking it until I made it kind of stuff. And that allowed me to be able to compete at a higher level emotionally and mentally mm-hmm. than I was able to before.
Okay.
This is the deficiency I see in young men, is that they don't know how to compete at a high level. And that's really the thing that separates the good ones from the great ones, is their ability to compete. And that's often missed in the discussion about how athletes develop, is what's their level of competitiveness and what's their level of ability to sustain that through adversity.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't at the time. I had a lot of talent, but I lacked in the competitive environment. And this is something God taught me and something my friends helped me with. And I did it in a God-glorifying way, which allowed me to succeed at a high level.
Well, I tell you what, it's true that everybody needs a mentor. Everyone needs discipling. And that is biblical. It's a principle that God gave us. And we're going to be talking more about how God is using that whole arena in Darren's life. My guest today is Darren Slack. I'm so glad he's here. He's a friend for many, many years, dating all the way back again to 1987. Boy, long time. We'll be back in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. In the studio today with Darren Slack, during the break, we were talking about the role that the call, the clarion call from God. You know, I think it's very true in so many ways. I heard this verse years ago taught on in a different way than I'd ever heard it quoted. The early version is, without vision, people perish, my people perish. But a better translation is that without revelation, people cast off restraint. And that is a real killer right there. Without revelation, people cast off restraint. So what's happening in this world today is that people have lost sight. And I think that COVID has had both a positive and a negative impact. And the difference is going to be whether or not we see what God is saying or whether we remember what his call was on our lives. And I think, sadly, Darren, you're one of those guys that early on began to realize that God was giving you a desire and a hunger, and you had the ability, like you said, you had that ability to throw the football. I can attest, you don't have to say it, I can attest, this man can throw the football like a rocket. It was amazing. But even with all the talent, he had to have that sense of call. It's defined and refined. Those two words have to happen in all of our lives. It has to be defined, and then it has to be refined, because it's not just a one-time thing. So the sense of knowing what God is saying in your life is a real critical thing, isn't it?
It's critical. When I arrived at Metro Life Church in the late 80s, I was living not with the call of being a quarterback, but with the sense of a purpose of God and the kingdom of God. I was a believer, had been for 4 years, president of Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Every day I went to practice, I would pray that his purpose would be manifest in how I played. Right up to the part where I got pulled in the semifinals of the national championship, there seemed to be this sense of duty and opportunity, and yet at the 11th hour, something significant happened that caused all that to kind of implode. And it's when adversity strikes that we really begin to understand what the call of God is and what it does in our lives. It keeps us pressing forward despite what we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's knowing and trusting in his character that has called me to know that he will work all things together for good, which he did. And I don't want to get into the minutiae. I really appreciate the fact that you identify that I can throw a ball, or I was able to. I don't throw it like that anymore. But really, I'm kind of glad, because I never want to be defined by a talent I possess in the world. I want to be defined by my passion to fulfill the call of God on my life from day one.
Mm-hmm.
And that call is actually prophetic. It's, I've called you to be a prophet to the nations, which in my world, that just simply means that I'm going to be a voice to other places he sends me to declare the gospel, but also what he's saying in a timely manner to leaders and others that God sends me to. Now, at the time, I thought it was just a novelty, a cool way to be validated, kind of like Joseph standing up on the rock in front of his brothers with a technicolor coat going, look at me, I'm going to be used by God, and you're all going to bow down to me. I had a very arrogant view. I had a very self-serving view of a call, the idea that I would achieve this great thing, and it would be a way to get in the church what I could not get in the world. And I see a lot of people doing that. And then when all of a sudden adversity struck, and things weren't working the way that I thought, and nothing was happening the way I thought, I began to question everything. I'm like, God hasn't called me. I'm not supposed to do anything. I'll just serve at Metro Life Church, and that's all I'm ever going to do, and I'm stuck here. And for 28 years, I waited on the call of God in my life to come to maturity and to be fashioned not as something I aspire to validate myself, but as something God wanted to do with me to honor himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I fear that people live today without an awareness of his purpose in their lives, a sense of calling and responsibility to the kingdom. Not that they don't feel like they got to serve him faithfully, but with that innate desire to really please the Father in what specifically their gifts and talents are wired to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure people know that. And so something like COVID has really thrown people out of their routine to the point where they had to sit for a while and think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times did you find yourself just kind of going, wow, everything I thought was a way is now upside down and backwards. I got to wear a mask. I got to stay away from people. And it's just, yeah, all that has its value and place in keeping people healthy. But I believe as believers, we were all confronted with the reality of what is going to really count going forward from this. And I'm just grateful for the work that he's done in my life to never let my identity be in what I was doing, but only in my desire to fulfill the call that he'd put on my life. And even if that meant I had to do it in obscurity,
mm-hmm.
with humility, which, you know, at the time was not a priority of mine, as you know, I was pretty arrogant and pretty preoccupied with my abilities. And God's done a work. And what he's done is he's, by his love, by his kindness, by his gentleness, has broken that thing in me that needed to be the guy and let Jesus be the guy. and let the purpose of God come forth in a fruit of the Spirit kind of a way, where I don't strive or feel like I have to achieve something anymore. It's just, it's my joy and delight to live my life for what I believe I'm called to, whether that's serving on missions outside the United States from time to time, like I get the privilege to do, training people in football, or just loving my family for the purpose of God, or serving in Publix if that's my job, or whatever it is. I'm honoring the King, and that is my greatest joy in life.
You know, when you talk about COVID and the initial impact, none of us thought it was going to last this long in the beginning, and it wasn't supposed to. A two-week quarantine, we're all going to just shut down and lock things down for a couple of weeks, and now that has stretched into months. And I listened to a report yesterday, Darren. If this is true, one person said we're going to be living like this into 2022. And I'm thinking, oh, Lord, have mercy upon us all. Surely that is not going to be what happens. Lord, please don't let that happen. I'm praying that way. But the point is that we've all been forced to slow down a little bit and say, you know, for some people it was working at home when they weren't working at home before. Other people, it was homeschooling when they never thought they would homeschool, and that's what they're doing, and that's what they may be doing again for a while now. But the whole point of God getting our attention, that is being very clear, that this is a great opportunity for all of us to evaluate and reevaluate where we are, what's going on, and then to ask the Lord the question, Lord, what am I here for this year? What is going on? Are you seeing that happen with a lot of people right now as a result of COVID?
No question about it. I mean, I was even in that place. I was a week before the largest camp season we were kicking off in the history of our organization, and it all went away in one day. I lost hundreds of thousands of dollars in our business as a result. We would have gone under had not God done what he did in a miraculous way to change and shift and pivot what we had been working on, which we can talk about in a moment. Had I not obeyed him in the previous 2 years doing what I was doing, I would have been in trouble, serious trouble. And by the mercy of God, and only by the grace of God, are we where we are. I'd have been out of my house because the camp business went dead. It was belly up. Mm-hmm. Nobody could go anywhere. Couldn't get a school to do an event.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I think COVID has created two things. One, a sense of urgency in believers, but I also believe what's coming as a result of this, and I believe prophetically this is true, is that a great despair is going to come upon many who don't know God. In other words, they've looked at all these things and they've tried to affect change and trying to do the best they can, and they're realizing that none of it's working. This is going to continue in a way that they're going to be beyond their capacity to sustain. Homeschooling a kid is tough. I don't care how you do it, because you have a career to maintain, you have jobs, you got people on Zoom trying to keep their kids at bay while they're trying to have a good attitude on TV. And I mean, people are just struggling. And over time, yeah, a little bit of emotional energy you can expend for a period of time, mm-hmm. they're going to run out of gas. And what's the result? I believe it's going to cause people to reevaluate what they were in related to God in many places in their life. Some of these people came to God and have walked away. I mean, there's going to be a revival that comes out of this, because people are going to start looking online at content that they didn't look at before, secretly, asking questions, desiring to understand something more. God is going to draw them, because that despair is going to produce something in them that said, this is not the way it was supposed to be. The American dream has been imploded. I don't care what political party you're in. The American dream has been imploded. And as a result, it has turned us into what amounts to a third world country in the way we operate. And the economy is going to recover. Things are going to get better, yes. But in the hearts of the people, mm-hmm. something has shifted. And it's going to bring forth fear and anxiety that is going to force people to look at their values and their Christianity or their lack of it and wonder if there's something more. And I believe the church needs to be ready to respond to that with hope and with joy and with purpose.
I agree with that. You know, it's not just the American dream. It's the American way of life. It's the way we
exactly.
live every day that has imploded.
Right.
Because we can't even go out. And I know every time I go into a business, it's almost a common murmuring underneath the mask. It's like a desire. Can we get past this? When are we going to get past this? So this anxiety is either going, no one can carry that level of anxiety for a long extended period of time. It's going to bubble over. It's going to break out in some way. We need to realize that God is at work, and I agree. I think he's doing something. I think it's an unusual, unprecedented time, but that can be both a positive thing as well as a negative thing.
Well, there's a real testimony here for me, and when I talk about this idea of calling, in that a couple of years back, the Spirit of God prompted me that I would become a producer. Now, I didn't know what he meant, and I had to study a little bit. You know, what do you mean a producer? Oh, yeah, I do DVDs for my business, and I did stuff to sell for my quarterback training, and I thought that's what he was saying, is that I'll be a producer more than that. He's like, no, this is going to become the way you provide, the way I provide for you. And I mean, I'm like, producer? I mean, that's TV. That's movie stuff. And that's what he said. Yes, you like watching movies, and you always said if you weren't doing football, you do that. Well, that's what you're going to be doing. And I'm like, and it was totally off my radar. I was busy coaching football, seeing the next thing coming. This was 2016. It was just in the middle of my time alone with the Lord, as I was asking him for some strategies for me that he would want me to focus on in the coming year, some things that were on his heart about my approach and things he wanted me to ramp up my efforts in. And my wife, within a short time of me sharing that with her, says, well, you should build a production studio. And I'm like, what? I already had a little thing in my garage and a little half up green screen, you know. And she's like, you should take some of the rental property that we have for the organization for football and build a big one. And I'm like, this is my wife. She doesn't ever say stuff like that. So I took that to the Lord, and I felt the Lord show me, build a production studio. I mean, just playing out. I'm like, okay, that's you, Lord. So I got on YouTube and started looking at what a production studio, I didn't even know what it was, Mike. I only knew you as the person who does production. So I called you and asked you for help. I got online. I studied. I looked on YouTube at do-it-yourself production studios and how to do it. And I built a 700 square foot green screen out of basically understanding how to do it yourself on YouTube. And unreal. I already had some capacity to do what I could do with it. And I had to get better. And I had makeshift cameras and makeshift lights, and I had stuff I'd bought off of eBay, and I just patched it together with Band-Aids and duct tape, and then started producing content that we use to teach quarterbacks online, just as a way to kind of, and I put another set of DVDs out and thought, hey, I'm being a producer now, and that's what I'm doing. And then 2 years later, I'm talking to a brother who's I travel with missions on, Tony Nardella, and he's saying, God's called me to do a TV show. I'm like, oh, great, bro. That's awesome. He goes, I have no idea how to do it. And I said, well, you know, if you need some help editing, I can do some editing from time to time. And I'll, you know, I was traveling with him on missions and doing stuff, and I'm busy with the quarterback business and everything else. And I literally in my spirit felt the Lord and prompt me while I was producing a television show. I'm in the middle of the phone call, and I'm like, what do you mean produce a television show? I don't even know what you're talking about. He's like, do you remember the word? And I had forgotten what he had said 2 years before. And I went back to my journal and I said, Tony, can you hold on a second? I'm literally in the middle of a phone call. And I pulled it up, and it was just all the journal notes that I took from the Lord revealing that to me. I said, Tony, can I read something to you? And I read to him what I felt the Lord show me on April 22nd, 2016. And I said, I think I'm supposed to produce your television show, and I have no idea how to do that. He goes, can we just pray about that? He's like, hey, let's do that. Put together something. Let's talk. Well, now we're 24 episodes in. We're in East Africa, Europe, the United States. We're in three amazing networks. It's unbelievable what the Lord has done. And all of it started April 15th this year when COVID struck. We had been spending 2 years talking about it, producing. We got three or four episodes shot. It was really tough to find time to do it. We were struggling. I was like, this is really God. You know, I'm learning how to do stuff. I don't know how to do lighting. I don't do camera, audio. I'm calling you with nightmares of how do I get the audio fixed because I'm not good at this. I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm crying out to God for mercy, and he's sending you and others to help me. And all of a sudden, Tony goes, we need to get serious. We're going now, because the Lord's told me that COVID is an opportunity for us to raise money to serve those who can't be fed in South America, the brothers and sisters we're close to. So I want to get on the air. And I had 3 weeks to produce my first episode. I went from 2 years, three episodes, to 3 weeks, one episode, 28 minutes and 30 seconds. And for 5.5 straight months, we have produced one episode a week for 24 straight weeks. And I have been put into a whole new zip code of a new mission in my life. And now all of a sudden, the Lord's opening up doors to do videos for pregnancy centers and other people. And, you know, I've really begun to see what God's going to do with this in a way I never thought. Even in my football business, the need is content to help kids get online and learn. That's where everything's going, is online content.
You know, I'm sitting here thinking about what you said earlier about the American dream, and it hits me how much more important it is to have the Lord's dream for us than the American dream. The Lord's dream for you, his word to you back in 2016. And this is what excites me about how God uses you, Darren. There was a time in my life in 2013 that I was just broken and worried and wondering what was going to happen in my life, not knowing where I was going to be going. And unknown to me, we out of the blue made a decision to, we were living in Gainesville at the time. We were on a cruise. My wife and I were with some friends on a cruise. Out of the blue, while we were on that cruise, the Lord speaks to me a word, and I was encouraging, and I thought, oh, I'm reading the word, and it's out of the book of Psalms, and it's just like it spoke to me, and it alleviated a lot of the weightiness that was going on me. And then we unexpectedly joined the service that Sunday morning. Once we got back from the cruise, we drove over and just thought we would just join with the friends at Metro Life Church before we head back to Gainesville. So we're there, and you see me, and you come up and you go, I can't believe you're here. And you said, this week, the Lord brought you to my mind. I'm sitting on an airplane, and you bring out the notes and what you spoke to me. I carry that with me. You have no idea how incredibly encouraging that was. And this is the testimony of how God uses the prophetic in a person's life, is that this is not a fanfare thing. This is not it's not like, you know, bright lights and movie screens and things like that. This is just being obedient to the Lord when you're sitting on an airplane and the Lord begins to impress something in your heart and you write it down, and not knowing you're going to see the person in a couple of days. And when you share what those thoughts were, it's just like liberating.
Well, I remember that situation, and I remember being on the airplane. I normally don't think about anybody. I put my headphones on and I disappear, and I'll watch a movie or I'll just read something or what have you. And the Spirit spoke expressly to me when I sat down that I'm to sit down and he has something to tell me about you. Mm. And I am like, I never talked to Mike Gillen. Why is Mike Gillen suddenly on my heart? And it's the willingness of our hearts to remain connected to the Spirit that's key to that process. It's not what we're going to be asked to do. It's our willingness to be available to just do what he asks and to hear him and to follow him. And I wrote that down not knowing that I would see you that Sunday. Yeah. I was going to send it to you by email because I knew we had contact and hope it would serve you. It was never about me understanding why I was getting it. It was about my willingness to capture it. And I think that's always been the issue, is if we're willing to do what God asks, we'll get opportunities that come along that may surprise us. And I've just been willing to say yes. That's all. There's nothing special about me. Throwing a football does nothing for my Christianity. But my willingness to say yes has been the game changer over the time. And even that has been a challenge because the ante has gone up in terms of my willingness to say yes to God so many times, Mike. And here now at 54 years old, having to say yes to a new career. I mean, I heard it said the other day, and I really think this has helped me getting a vision for what I'm doing, because I'll be honest, my vision for many, many years was impact young men's lives for the future of football and for the future of communities, and that was football. And now all of a sudden, I'm in obscurity behind the camera, having to humble myself and serve and not be the guy out front. I'm good on camera, but I'm not the guy, you know, and I'm in a different position. And what I've learned along the way is that I'm a modern day scribe. I'm capturing the testimony of people who are following God in amazing ways. I've been humbled by the testimonies I've seen on our television show and on other people that have just done things that I can't even imagine in obedience and just saying yes to God. And we're not talking about fly-by-night emotionalism. We're talking about life in danger kind of obedience, where if they said yes, it could cost them their lives. Mm-hmm. And they're sharing God's faithfulness to them in the middle of that. You know, and so I feel like I'm capturing something that's going to serve not just this generation, but the ones to come.
It's incredible.
Because content isn't just the idea of gathering information to tell people what you're doing on a given day, but God wants a record of his glory being manifested in people's lives that he can share with people. That's how he's using technology today. Mm-hmm. And Zoom and everything else is capturing that mm-hmm. as glorious to the Lord. And this is the way I believe the gospel will go forth, even to other countries, is through this Zoom and other technologies we have. And what I'm doing and the small contribution I'm making is providing a context for people to do that, to share the testimony of the Lord so the gospel can go forth.
Darren Slack is my guest. Don't go away. We'll be back with one more segment coming up in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Well, I'm so enjoying our time with Darren Slack today. Darren is a producer now, in addition to being NFA's founder. Tell us about what
that's says. National Football Academies. We're actually mm-hmm. changing our moniker to QB Collective Academy, as we're being acquired by a larger organization now. So we're in the process of our business taking another step up and having an opportunity to do some pretty cool things. So what I thought was dead is actually quite alive and has an opportunity to make a big impact in the coming years through some connections with the NFL and some really neat things the Lord's doing to bring blessing to something that I thought was over. And now all of a sudden it's being resurged. So we could see some great stuff out of that. But in addition, now the Lord has added this other element of my life, and I'll be doing that as the organization moves forward. I won't be as much on the field. I'll actually be producing content through online training to impact young men's lives, as well as capturing on video what needs to be done to serve football going forward. So I really am moving into full-time production in every way.
I know you are, and I've told you this 100 times. You're a lot better than you think you are. I know you get frustrated, and I've told Darren.
I just don't know how to do lighting. I don't know how to do audio. I mean, I'm just learning, but it's really fun to hear you say that.
The thing that has always happened ever since the beginning phone call that I received from Darren is he's going on with this like he has not done any idea at all about what he's doing, and then he sends me an example of what he's done, and I'm going, holy cow, you did this? You're kidding me. It's fantastic. What are you worried about, Darren? And I think that's part of your problem is I've told him you're a lot better than you think you are, my man.
Very kind.
Now, in the time we have remaining, which is only a couple of minutes, the Lord is clearly speaking right now through what you've told us here today. And I believe an encouragement needs to go out to people who are fighting these things, who are fighting discouragement. If someone's listening today and that's who they are, they're discouraged, they don't know what it is, COVID's knocked their world right upside the head, what is the Lord, do you think, is saying to them?
You know, there's a wonderful passage that speaks right to this, and I had the privilege to preach this recently, and I think it would really be helpful. You know, in the follow-up to God's declaration publicly that the Jesus was my son in whom I'm well pleased at the baptism at the River Jordan, Jesus was led into the wilderness, a season of coming away, a season of adversity for him. And I think, in a sense, the church has been led into a wilderness season, if you will. Whether intended or not, it just is what it is. The enemy has certainly opened this door. And it's interesting, at the end of that time, the enemy came to Jesus and tested him. And the first thing he tested him in was his identity, if you are the Son of God. And I believe that the church is being tested in its identity. If you are the church of Jesus Christ, if you are who you think you are, if you are what you think you've been. See, a lot of us, we have been exposed through this COVID situation. We haven't used our time wisely. We have been lazy. We've binged Netflix. We've overdone it in the eating area. We've gained too much weight. Many of us, even driving today, since there's people driving today, that you're just getting back to work and yet you feel like a shell of your former self spiritually because you just didn't use this time wisely. I have a word of encouragement for you that Jesus's response is what I believe God has for you. Man does not live by bread alone. He says, if you're the Son of God, turn these stones into bread and feed yourself. And he says, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Mm. We must shift our thinking from the security we draw from provision or things that we think we have in this world that can satisfy even influence, even power, or anything we draw from this world, and turn our attention to every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. What is God saying to you today about you? And I can tell you, he's not mad. He's not angry. He knew all these things were there before. What he's saying is, it's not over.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, there's a word I have for you, a work that I have for you to complete, and you're not done yet. All the promises I gave you are true and now. And so what I want you to do is to slow down a minute. I want you to take a minute and start listening to what I'm saying to you. And that now word that God is giving us is helping us on a daily basis. See, I just went day to day. I stopped going, hey, what am I going to do 5 years from now? And I said, Lord, what do you want me to do today? Mm-hmm. And I just started asking the Spirit of God to show me what he wanted me to do today or this week. What's the focus? And, you know, for me, it was editing and learning how to use equipment. And I mean, I whined and cried my way through a lot of it. But, you know, that word of that current now Rhema Spirit-inspired call to obedience from the Father's love really saw me through the adversity that others I saw collapsing in. And I believe that each of us, if we would just take the time to step back and ask what the Spirit of God is saying to us right now, to receive that word, it would bring life, encouragement, and healing.
I tell you what, when I look at what's going on right now, a retreat into his word is so critical.
Amen.
We need the Bible. We need it. We need what our mutual friend Darren Edgington years ago said, we need FaceTime with God. And he said that before that phone app ever came out. We need to have FaceTime, meaning our face needs to be in the word of God.
Right.
And if it's in the word of God, then he speaks to us so amazingly, just like he did in that room that night on that show.
He'll give us strategies to know how to address what's before us, what's going on around us.
Yeah.
In every way.
He does it.
Scripturally and spiritually.
He does it. And it's life to those who find it, health to our flesh. That's what the word of God brings. Darren, we're out of time. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed having you here. Well, there's so much more about your future, and so in a couple of months, when things get a little more defined for you, you've got to come back and talk about this whole new thing of technology, because there's a whole new side. And maybe by then, Darren, all of this will be over and we'll be able to be post-COVID.
Be my joy. Thank you, Mike, for
that
the opportunity.
That would be awesome. And that's all my time. Thanks for being with me today here on Afternoons with Mike. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.